Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second. He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now Chael Sonnen's on PodcastOne.com. And for that, you're welcome.
What's happening, guys? Happy Wednesday. I'm down here with my longtime friend, my teammate, and current King of the Cage world champion, Ben Eggly. Ben, what's going on, pal?
Hey, just another day. Glad to be here. I'm excited.
All right. Tell me this. Are you up to speed on the Ray Borg situation from over the weekend?
I have most of the details. Yeah, it was definitely a bummer that it didn't go down the way it should have.
Ben, I would never kick a guy when he's down. I tell that to you because I don't want anything that I'm about to say to you to sound like I'm being negative towards Ray. I'm not. But I can't help but be a little bit confused and a little bit annoyed with the situation. These opportunities are so hard to come by. That's why I want to kick him. I know good and I don't even know Ray Borg, but I know I'm right when I tell you he would not miss this opportunity on his own free will. I understand he was sick, and in his absolute defense, it was actually the UFC doctors, Dr. Davison, that said, look, you're not fit to fight. We got to take you out of this. I can't help but still be a little bit confused by that, man. This is a world championship. What would have you done?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to say if you do, if you weren't there. It's such a big opportunity. You know, I've had at least two fights where I've been sick the week of. One was a cold, had to be shooting up nasal spray before the fight so I could breathe through my nose all the way. I've had some kind of flu-like stomach issues and things like that. But you know, it was fight week. The weight cut was basically already done. The fans were already there. The tickets are already sold. I've been sick a few times, but I step out there anyways. And, you know, it's hard to know what he was feeling. I think the one thing is anytime you have issues with maybe being sick, and I especially have heard at the higher levels where they're weighing you in more and there's doctors everywhere, yep, is you can never let on that something's wrong. You know, the decision should come from the fighter. You know, if they really can't continue and they call it themselves. But yeah, if you let on to someone that you're not feeling good or that you're hurt or something, it's pretty easy for a doctor, and you know, especially that's not a fighter, to err on the side of caution and stop the fight. And you know, that messes up a lot of people's life.
Yeah, almost required. I mean, the doctor is only as good as the information you give him. And if you say, look, doc, I don't feel good, that is your way of tipping the hat saying, get me out of this. And a doctor has to listen to that. I'm not kicking Ray at all. I'm truly not. Most of the time when you make a statement like that, you then kick a guy, you just don't want to look like a jerk for doing it. I really don't want to do that, but I'll make this deal with Ray, if you will. I will not give you a hard time, and if you were sick, you couldn't fight. In exchange, you cannot complain in the future if this opportunity doesn't come back, because you know this was never Ray's fight to start with. It was supposed to be Dillashaw's fight. Mm-hmm. In fairness, I mean, that's the fight that everybody tried to make. Demetrius got in the way. I mean, we all kind of saw how that drama unfolded, and it defaulted back to Ray Borg, who I trust is a complete stud. I'm not very familiar with him, but I trust he's a complete stud if he became a number one contender. But the landscape does move fast, and the first rule is the show must go on. And if you miss those shots, man, I think that's where I'm speaking to you passionately, but there's a huge part of me that just feels for him so much. You know, everything was on the line, and he trained, and he was out there, and blah, 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 and he missed the shot. But, I mean, that's still the reality. You don't know if you're going to get those back.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, like I said, I've been feeling really bad. I've gone into a couple fights ago. I had some back issues that popped up like the day of the fight. I was getting ready to look for a chiropractor in a town that I didn't live in. Decided that a good warm up would help me, and it did. But you know, pretty extreme pain and discomfort before the warm up began. You know, that's not being sick. That is something maybe you could that I warmed up through and was fine. But you know, I think being sick too, or like cutting weight is a time where you feel so bad. It's really easy to make a decision like, I don't want to do this. And it
sure
takes a moment to step back. But yeah, it's unfortunate. And again, like I said, I would have had my buddies keeping the doctors away from me, and I would have put on my best face, and it would have been up to me, hopefully,
right,
to decide, 'cause it's my destiny, not theirs.
Yeah. And I would have done that same thing, but that, That doesn't mean it's fair for me to critique Ray. Who knows what he was going through? Here would be on the world of speculation. And it does annoy me a little bit, Ben.
Yeah.
Okay, he misses the fight. He misses an opportunity. That's on him. He doesn't need any flack from us sitting over here, trying to quarterback this thing a few days later. But I think I bring up a fair point when I say this. When Ray Borg is sick and he can't go through with what he's contracted to do, but he can go to social media and tell everybody off for being annoyed or confused, that's a conflict for me. When I was in wrestling practice, you know Kevin Keeney very well.
Yes.
One of the best coaches I've been around. He stole this idea from Roy Pittman, but I've seen Kevin pull this same rabbit out of his hat. We'll have a really hard practice. By the end of practice, we got 6 or 7 kids on the side of the mat. And as coaches, if a kid says, I'm out, he's out. If a kid says, I'm sick, I'm tired, he's out. We do not argue. We do not push him through it. He can go have a seat and watch practice till it ends. So we would have a really hard practice. We'd have the, 6, 7, 8 kids that are out. And at the end of practice, Kevin would end them the same way. He'd play a game. And every one of those kids would come in off the sideline to go play dodgeball. And he'd let it go. And then he'd wrap up. He'd bring everybody in. He'd sit them down. He'd critique some guys, point some guys out before we all broken, went home for the night. But he'd always bring it up. He'd say, I did notice. And he would never say him by name. He'd say, I noticed we had a handful of kids out. I noticed at the end of practice when it was time to play a game, nobody was out. So you can do something when you wanted to do so, or when it was easier. Mm-hmm. And that's what the real message was. He'd never embarrass them and point them out. He'd just leave that thought for everybody to then go home and reflect back on. And he would do this same thing every time we had a group of guys. And I couldn't help but think of that example when Ray Borg, who's pulled out of a fight because he's not feeling good, is on social media telling people off and pleading his case. It's like, golly, Ray, if you're so sick and you're down and out, I couldn't imagine logging onto Wi-Fi. I mean, I'm picturing a guy that's in bed with his mom by him and some chicken noodle soup. And if I find out there's anything less than that, man, it annoys me, Ben. I'm annoyed.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Fantasy football fans, the wait is over. Football is back, which means FanDuel is back. Guys, this is fantasy football for everyday fans. New contests starting every week. No more busted seasons. There's something for everyone. There's lots of contests to choose from, and they start at just $1. Pick a contest, choose your team, and watch your score in real time. Over 2.5 million players have won cash prizes playing fantasy sports on FanDuel. Sign up today. Go to FanDuel.com, click the Join Now button, and use my code CHAIL. Try FanDuel for free with no deposit required. Visit FanDuel.com to claim your free contest and play for your share of $10,000. Just sign up using the promo code CHAIL. That's FanDuel.com. Promo code CHAIL. Void where prohibited now. Let's get to you, mate. King of the Cage champion. Congratulations on your career and success, by the way.
Thank you.
One thing about you, and I think that any opponent would be wise, and if they studied your tapes, I think they'd agree with me. Above everything else, and you're skilled everywhere, no question, none of this is meant to be a slight on your skill, but your number one attribute is you're tough. I mean, the longer that fight goes, the worse it gets for the other guy. Yeah. I always have admired fighters that are like you, that the Shogun Hua types, guys like yourself, where in the 4th and 5th round, you had better be ready because Ben Eggley's still going to be there.
Yep.
I bring this up specifically 2 fights ago with Ryan Walker. I really thought that showed him. You guys went absolutely to war. Mm. And I thought it was your conditioning more than your rear naked choke. You may disagree with me, but that's what I saw from my seat. Your fight with Tyson Jeffries, that was such a hard fight.
Yeah.
In my opinion, was it as hard in that cage as it looked from my seat in the front row? Because I'm going, man, these guys are going to war.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was as hard as it looked, or harder. You know what it feels like to be in there. To the average person, it was infinitely harder than, just dig deep. And what I said was, the plan was to pretend like round one was round three and I'm already down. It's to just go out there and push the pace. And each round, just we started as if, even though I was tired, that I had all the energy in the world. And I think in the Ryan fight as well as the Tyson fight, I think I had just enough, a little tiny bit more each round Now, there was one in both of those fights where I did lose one round to Ryan, one round to Tyson on most of the judges' scorecards after such a blistering, you know, whatever, first or second round. But then you have to shift gears and dig even deeper than you could possibly dig. And Tyson, the Tyson fight, I should have, you know, woulda, shoulda, coulda, no excuse. I had a triangle. It was the smallest hole I could have made my legs humanly possible. And he just had decided that before that fight is, I'm sure, I'm not going to tap. I'm going to go to sleep or I'm going to get out. And I put a good steady squeeze on it, and he fought out of it and ended the round on top. And so second round, a little bit of jelly legs, but I just kept looking for the submissions. And I by my count, I'd have to review the tape again. I think I had 6 or 7 reasonable attempts. And then it just became the fact that I'm just going to have to punch this guy until the ref stops it. Cause he's not going to quit, but I can make the ref make him quit.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's not just a compliment to you. That's a compliment to Tyson.
Yes.
You know, whenever somebody asks me, who's the toughest guy you've encountered? We haven't heard of. I don't even hesitate. Tyson Jeffries. When we were teammates at one, did you ever work out with Tyson? Did he come in the room?
It wasn't until the Rose City days where I would come like on the Saturdays and train a little
bit. So you're well aware how good he is, particularly in the gym.
Yes.
He is a guy that's a little better when there isn't that stress on him. That's a fair critique. Mm. I never hesitate when somebody asks me, who's the best guy we've never heard? Tyson Jeffries.
Yeah.
Michael Bisping agrees with me. Rampage Jackson agrees with me. I name drop those guys just because the audience would know those guys.
Yeah.
But they say the same thing, how impressive this guy is in the room. I was so impressed when you talk about those submissions you had on Tyson. There are times I would see Tyson flick it, and he never flicked it in your fight. You had to beat it out of him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you finally got to that position.
Literally.
You know, and I could tell you were tired.
Smash.
Yeah, but you just would not stop. And it's what Ben Eggley does better than anything is he pushes hard. And I was so proud of Tyson. I just thought he overcame so many demons that he's had where he doesn't compete well. I mean, he competed great.
Yep.
And I tried to tell him that after the fight. I'm like, Tyson, you don't understand. If you took that same competitive spirit that you took into this fight with Ben, you go do 10 more fights, you're going to win 9 of them.
Yep.
That's what beats got. You just went with a champion, pushed him to the brink, and it was just one of these things. I was so impressed with that whole match. I want to ask you this, though. Who was winning that fight up until that point? And I mean this, did you ever see the official judges' scorecards?
I did.
Oh, who was winning that fight?
I was.
All 3 rounds?
They had me... 2 judges had me losing round 2 because I came off the 3-minute triangle squeeze. So 2 of them had me losing round 2, but all other rounds and by the other judge were all in my favor.
Okay. And I wouldn't disagree with that. I rode out of that fight with my father-in-law, Paige Van Zandt, and you know I had some people that are fight-minded, and we talked about them right home. I don't know who was winning.
Yeah.
If you gave all 3 rounds to Ben, I wouldn't argue. If you gave them to Tyson, I wouldn't argue. I don't know because it was so back and forth. Then you get on the ground, and Tyson had some positions, but then you had the submission attempts. It was just a great match.
Yeah.
And you know when I see something like that, and I know a guy like you, young, good-looking, willing to fight, weight class is right at 170 where they always need bodies. When are you going into the UFC? When are you going into Bellator? When does that come? And you probably would ask a guy like me, hey, what else do I have to do? But, I mean, there's got to be talks like that, right?
Just about every day, you know, and that's, you know, that's the question of the hour here, you know. Why is it not there yet? You know, we were under contract for 4 fights with King of the Cage, won all of them, won all by stoppage. We knew that we were we've been in contact with Bellator, with the UFC for on and off, and they check in every fight or so, and we check in with them, and we've had phone calls and this and that. And I was waiting for Monday after that Tyson Jeffries fight to get a call or to get an offer of some kind. And we delivered kind of a pitch ourselves. And they didn't hate the pitch. We just were told that we're still waiting on some things and that we don't have any room because, I mean, being 10-1 as a professional and 10-1 as an amateur, all 20 of my combined wins from both amateur and pro are finishes. And, you know, so, and I've been working hard for years and years and years, and being a champion at an organization like King of the Cage, it's been around since 1998, and fighting some pretty big names, Tyson being the one, he's one that a lot of people, and I know you and Steve Newport, one of the best refs in the business, he's wanted that fight for a long time too, because he just knew it would be exciting. So, you know, I have, you know, work hard on my social media presence. I have a YouTube channel for jiu-jitsu mostly. I feel like I'm doing everything right, and we've been in contact with people, and we're just kind of still waiting.
Sure. And that, every fighter says that, right? That's the hardest part. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. But good for you for doing everything right and sticking with it. And, man, don't be afraid to make a deal with one of those guys. You know, I can remember the Joe Silva days. Richard Chu works the same way. Now Sean Shelby's the guy. But with Joe Silva, you could hound him enough where you could finally make a deal and go, all right, Joe, I'm lighting up your email. I'm annoying you. And I can tell. What do I have to do? And Joe would finally, he responded to that. And sometimes it would be sometimes it'd be harder than you'd think, where he'd say, get three wins. Get three finishes. But sometimes it was one. Hey, win your next one, and I'll do it. But whatever Joe said, he would honor no matter what. If he told you three and you did three, if he told you three finishes, if he told you two more, don't be afraid to pin those guys down. Yeah. Sean, I've been in touch with you. You know, Richard, I've been in touch with you. How about we make a deal?
Right.
If I go get one more and I can stop the guy, can I get in? And those guys are good for their word, but sometimes you got to do that. Yes, that might sound a little creative, but I'm telling you, it works. Those guys will honor their deal. So now we got to pin them down. You got to pin them down to saying something, not, hey, just stick in there and let me know.
Right.
That's kind of the blanket text you go on about your day. If you can hound those guys, I'm going off of Joe Silva, but these guys are just like him. He was the best ever. Make a deal. Make some kind of a deal with them and then follow through.
Well, and you remember back in, because we all went, every welterweight from the area, when we went out for the tough tryouts, it was tough season 22, which turned out to be the McGregor season.
Yep.
I made it through all rounds of cuts, and I made it through the grappling. Absolutely destroyed the poor guy, some kid from Kentucky, and I just said, I'm going to go as hard as I can for this whole round until they say stop. And had him submitted once, and then almost had him then at the end. Hit pads pretty good, I guess, and then felt like I did pretty good in the interview. You know, you can clearly hear it now. I'm, you know, not an intimidating sounding guy. And I just played it as who I was, and the guy was pretty intense. It was doing the interview. It was kind of fun. And when he asked me a very serious question, I just gave him a very serious answer back. And so we waited for that. It took 8 hours until we heard the decision that we didn't make it. And then we found out that none of the welterweights had gone. They just decided to cut our whole weight class. And I thought that would have put my name more in the hat than it did. You know, it was a great experience. I'm glad I did it. I can tell people that I did it. It was, if I ever have to do it again, I'll know what to expect. But we thought that would pay a little more dividends. Like, there should be a stack, 16 pieces of paper with my name on it, you know?
Sure.
Somewhere. Someone's looking at it.
But, I get everything you're saying, and that's frustrating, isn't it?
It is.
I mean, if there's anything that makes you want to throw your hands up, because it's such a grind to live the life you live and the sacrifices you make and to be in shape and, you know, now being the champion of a televised event like King of the Cage, you got to go five rounds.
Yep.
I mean, I drive out there to watch you fight sometimes and go, why does Ben have to fight 25 minutes when everybody else gets to do 15? But that belt changes it.
Right.
And the sacrifices you go through. And it's those little things like the thing you just pointed out where I really thought I was going to get some traction, and I didn't. Am I right, though? But, I mean, that's the part that just deflates you and go, what do I have to do?
Right. Yeah. You know, and we're trying to make some moves and make some more connections and things like that. And there's been some times where I've really let it get me down, or I've been really impatient. I think the Ultimate Fighter was one of those. I was becoming impatient. And then I realized, you know, I had becoming the champion and getting all of those fights that taught me a lot of good lessons. Got hurt in the first championship fight, won. Fought Ryan, good war on purpose, submitted a tough veteran in the first round, the next one, and then an even tougher war after. So I'm glad and thankful for all that experience. I think that's now is really the time. That's what I was saying. It was back then, that might have been too soon. 5-0, Ben Eggley 6-0, maybe it would have been too soon. I needed some more tough lessons. I think I got those lessons, and now you know, I'm ready to go. But I tried to only... If I get down, I try to only get down for a little bit, and then I just go back to training, and we go back to look
have
for...
Have to.
Yeah. You know, and so this last fight against Tyson, I broke my orbital bone in two places in the second round, and of course, I didn't know that. I just knew that I couldn't see very good for about 30 seconds, and after the fight stopped, it felt like my eye was going to pop out of my head. But it hurt like crazy for 5 or 6 days, and then it kind of went back to normal. But I was sitting on the couch, my eye hurt. I didn't get that call from Bellator, that call from the UFC, and I just go, I'm going to get on the Submission Underground. I need to. I just have to keep beating people up until they call me up there. One kick one butt at a time until they've all been kicked.
Yeah. Speaking of October 1st on Flow Grappling, you're taking on Craig Jones, black belt. What do you know about Craig?
Yeah, you know, he's done a lot of competing, and you know, he travels the world and does jiu-jitsu, which sounds really fun.
Right.
I stay in the Portland area and do lots of jiu-jitsu and a lot of MMA. So, you know, leg locking guy, accelerated through the ranks really quick. We have a very similar build, which will be kind of fun. The lanky guy's throwing down who's longer and skinnier than the other guy. Obviously, he's a leg lock guy. In the done a lot of those big tournaments and EBIs and whatnot, so definitely different styles, similar body, different styles. He's a world champion, and you know, I think it's going to be a good match. I think I have all the skills needed to beat him. And what I tell people is doing grappling events. If I know that I don't have a fight or I can't get a fight for a while, I always like to do jiu-jitsu competitions, gi, no gi. The Submission Underground is here now, and everybody knows it, and so it just timed up right for me to do this one. And a lot of people say, like, oh, you know, he's a world champion, which is amazing. I said, but if I only did jiu-jitsu, I would have a very, very, very long list of world titles and Pan Ams and this at every belt level. But fighting is my primary, and my jiu-jitsu is as good as all those guys. I just don't get to do jiu-jitsu only competitions at a very high level, because I'm trying to punch people in the face at
sure.
a high level.
Yeah, well, and you made it to the highest level. I mean, you got the belt right now with King of the Cage. But I want to ask you this in fairness, okay, without being a jerk to you, but okay. In an 8-minute EBI atmosphere, are you going to be able to put the pace on him? I mean, you only have 8 minutes. Ben Eggley likes a little more time usually.
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, for grappling, because it is one, yeah, I think of it as one round. It's what you have one round. It's not, I don't pace my, you know, jiu-jitsu, you got to play a little bit more pace. We don't get to go as crazy as we would in wrestling and just move forward and grind them down. You know, so there's that element of strategy and being patient and not giving up anything crazy. But, I think in a grappling match, because I think of it as one round, is I try to go out there and win as fast as I can. And this, the first time I did it, the SUG 2 event, I went out there and everybody, I think I went 17th, and a lot of great matches, very exciting undercard and obviously an incredibly exciting main card. But a lot of guys going to overtime. And
sure.
You remember from wrestling, I remember too, that my first overtime match as a seventh grade kid was three overtimes. And that at the time was the most exhausted I had ever been. And I had been doing a martial art or some kind of sport my whole life. And I said, I'm never going to overtime again. I'm going to win in regulation. Last fight, I managed, as soon as I got the top position, I went for the submission. I think it was just over 5 minutes in the last match that I got.
Good feeling, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Just
it's
get in
the
and
best
get out.
Feeling when those matches are over.
Yeah.
Some guy taps out, the referee breaks, and you go, oh, my goodness. I still got some energy. You know, you were telling a moment ago before we got onto Craig Jones and Submission Underground. You were talking about, you know, going through the Ultimate Fighter and making it to that final cut. I had an experience, Pride. You might be too young to remember.
No,
do you remember
I
a show
Pride.
Called Pride? Okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So nobody knew how to get into Pride. It was like the UFC. You know, you'll get asked, well, how do you get in? But there is no answer. There's no competitive architecture. Somebody asked me, how do I get to the NFL? I could answer that question and come up to the NCAA and get, you know, drafted and seen by a scout. And I could answer the question. But for MMA, it's really tough.
Right.
I can only kind of give a good idea. So Pride was like this impossible thing to get in. And when I was with Team Question, we had Randy Couture was the champion of the world at that time, and Matt was ranked number one, and Henderson was in with Pride, but nobody really knew who his contacts was because he was working with some guy named Sakabara, and he lived in Tokyo. It was just, Pride was like off limits to us, even though we were a pretty successful and well-known gym. No contacts. So Pride had done an event in L.A., and it was called a Pride tryout. And you put up, I think it was $85, and you go to this tryout. So I slipped out there. I didn't say anything to anybody. I just went out there. Well, when I get there, Ben, this thing is like an overwhelming success. I don't know if there was 500 guys or 1,000 guys, but it was at this huge auditorium. And, I mean, I waited in lines and lines just to register to get in the doors. So, and I thought this was kind of going to be under the cover. I saw about this online somewhere. I thought I was the only one that knew. No, huge success. Pay my money, go in. It goes great. They even gave an award. I can't remember what it was called, but I won the award. Good for me.
Oh.
Boom, I'm in. Ben, I never heard from those guys again.
Really?
They gave me an award. They took my $85, and I found it after the fact. This was all a marketing ploy. There was no try. There was nothing actually going on. And, you know, so I got this award. They only gave one, so I kind of won the thing, if I may.
Yeah.
I never heard from them again. I'm talking about, I didn't get an email. I didn't get a text message.
Wow.
They kept my money. They went back to Japan, and this whole thing was a marketing ploy. And you know, earlier when I was guessing that, hey, man, that had to be pretty deflating for you. Not only was it deflating for me, but then I was also used. On top of everything else, it was never real. This thing never, you were never going anywhere with it. I'm resentful to this day. This was in like 2003. I'm resentful to this day that that went on. And, you know, there is tough, and the Ultimate Fighter is by no means a marketing play. That's a real thing. They're giving out contracts. But there is this weird line, Ricky Simone, who of course you know. Okay.
Yes.
I would put Ricky as possibly the best fighter I've ever seen. That's a huge statement, and I'm ready to stand by it. I see that guy every day. I show up early on days that he spars when it's not even my time just to watch him because it motivates me. The guy's a special talent. That's a fair statement by me. And he goes into the Contender Series. Huge opportunity. He wins in the Contender Series, but he doesn't get the contract. And what ends up happening unfairly, and I don't want this to have happened to him, but I worry that it could have happened, is sometimes guys will go through tough. Sometimes they'll make it all the way to the Ultimate Fighter. They'll lose. Let's say a guy will lose his first round. He's then forever looked at as the guy that wasn't good enough to win tough. But if you look a little closer, the guy he lost to won the whole thing, went on and won the world championship, and it was just the luck of a draw.
Right.
And, you know, that kind of happened with Ricky right here. He got this opportunity with the Contender Series. He wins, but he wasn't the one chosen. It will piss me off if he's ever looked at as the guy that wasn't good enough to come to the Contender Series, because that's not true.
Right.
There's too many moving parts there. There's too many politics there. He did his part. He went out, he fought his ass off against a stud, I might add, had a war, won the war, and I want something good to happen for him. I want something good to happen for you.
Yeah.
It's the one part of the business that I don't like, because I can't answer a guy's question. What do I need to do to get into the UFC or Bellator? I can't answer the question.
Right. Everybody's
really
got different styles or different connections. But yeah, the Ricky, to speak to that, oh my gosh. Now, if you'd asked me, if I had was in the same spot and you said, well, how frustrated are you? Remember on the tough season when Rampage Jackson beat that door up and headbutted it?
Yeah.
That would have been me after getting a no on a contract if I was in that position. Because again, I mean, he's 10-1 too, just like I am. And he got to go to the Contender, and the fight was incredible. Like Matt Hughes style, running double legs to the other corner. And I mean, it was... What do you have to do? And
what,
I literally think
to,
that's
what do you
like,
have to do?
Yeah, you have to legally kill him, I guess, is what just about what.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I'll tell you this on Ricky, too. This might surprise you. That fight on the Contenders that we're sitting here bragging about, worst I've ever seen him look.
You think so?
I swear to goodness, it's the worst performance I've ever seen him have, and he still won.
Right.
He's that good.
He is?
I'm telling you, as soon as he got the call to be on the Contenders, there was like 9 days for him to train. Every single day I saw him train, he just looked terrible, and he still won all his rounds. Nobody gives him any problems. Ricky Smoke kick everybody's ass. No one gave him any problems, but I could tell he was nervous. He felt the pressure. He thought, this is my opportunity, and I could just feel he was a little tense and a little puckered up, and as great as he looked, it's the worst I've seen him look. I mean this as a compliment, but that's also a reality. Sometimes you get the right eyeballs on you, you feel that pressure, something happens, and more than anything, you want to go, okay, just give me one more chance. And this is a guy that won.
Right.
This is a guy that still, I'm just saying, he's so good. He's even better than what they saw. And I don't know how to finish this thought. I just want to make it to you because it's a frustrating business, man. I'm frustrated on your behalf when I'm going and watching you. You got this huge fan support. You know, when you walk in the arena, we're up there at the coast in Oregon for King of the Cage, national television broadcast. You're headlining the show. You got the title. And when you come through the curtain, I mean, that place goes insane.
Yeah.
I don't know a local. I know this local market better than anybody. I would probably be the guy people would turn to as the expert in the market. There's nobody that has a bigger fan base than Ben Eggley. That's a fact. And numbers don't lie. People lie all the time. Numbers don't lie, man.
Right.
You've got the base that's backing you, and you've brought them along all these years on this journey. I'm saying this because Richard Chu and Sean Shelby listen to this show. They text me after this show all the time, and I'm giving you your plug because you deserve
it. Thank you. Hey, Yes, he's an honest man. Everything he said is right.
It's true.
And I mean, yeah, the that's why if you've ever seen me, I mean, even my first fight, you see me walk out. Whatever arena I'm fighting in, whether it's the Roseland all those times, whether it's the Showware Center, whether it's Chinook Winds Casino, I walk out. That's like walking into my living room. I'm walking out to hang out with my friends and, you know, no, not nervous, just out there. I can hear, I do have a ton of fans and my fans are also very loud on top of that. So yeah, we can dominate a stadium, an arena and they've helped me a lot. They are how I was able to even go to the Ultimate Fighter tryouts,
sure,
from crowdfunding and all that stuff. I raised my goal amount of money, I think, in 32 hours.
Wow.
To get out there. And so, tons of support. My friends and family would do almost probably too much if I asked them to, but yeah, it's great.
I am sick to death of everybody, including myself, talking about Conor and Mayweather. I swear to you, Ben, I'm gonna make this my goal to be my last time I speak on
okay.
it. But I would be remiss if I didn't get, as a fighter, your opinion. I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth. Tell me if I'm wrong, but wasn't that amazing? I mean, didn't Conor do something really amazing there?
In the fight or like
in the actual contest, going a half of an hour with a guy who's the best to have ever done it. I mean, isn't that a special thing that Conor did?
Yeah, it was. I think the thing that I was nervous about is that because there was so much money involved, I was worried that there wasn't going to be a fair fight. And I knew that, but then I knew that no matter what happened, there was, you know, Mayweather wasn't going to fake a fight, you know, fake a loss and be 49-1. There was no way that would happen. And, you know, I think Conor trained very hard for that. And I think, you know, we know that people don't know about fights until we sign the paperwork, but we might have been getting ready for that opponent for a really long time because we knew we were gunning for them or they were gunning for us. So yeah, I mean, if you ask, I mean, I can't imagine standing toe to toe with the best, you know, potentially of all time. We were talking about it, not to take anything away from their fight, and that was an amazing event in sports. We were talking about, it's like, what if it was Tyson? What if, you know, obviously there were
the
different sizes, but like,
power.
What if you stood in there with a
sure.
guy like Tyson, and it's like, for $300 million? Okay. I'll do
oh,
it for
yeah.
$200
million. Oh, yeah. No, there's no question you get guys to raise their hand and say, I'll do it. But there was a large part of me that thought, this is a cash grab. I know Conor's a guy with an ego, and he's going to represent himself as best he can. But the skills just aren't there. I come out of that, and I go, I don't really care that he got his ass kicked. Or for the naysayers that want to say he got his ass. He did it for a half an hour, Ben, and never fell down. He never once fell down.
Right.
Put myself in his shoes. You know, that's what they always say. You know, the golden rule, treat others the way you'd want to be treated. That's not happening for old Chael. Chael's falling down, man.
I don't believe it.
I mean, my goodness, of course. Or if you reverse the roles, you're bringing me a guy and it's a wrestling atmosphere, I'm going to take the guy down. There's just no two ways about it. And, I mean, he was a first-round draft pick. I'll use this example. If you took a guy and he was the king of street ball in your neighborhood, he was the best basketball player, but he was just in your neighborhood. He wasn't first-team All-State, or he wasn't the junior college standout, or the NCAA, or any of that, but he was the street ball legend of your neighborhood.
Mm.
And you had him play LeBron James, and he gave King James problems for 30 minutes. It doesn't matter if James ends up beating him. If he gives James problems for 30 minutes, that guy is signing a contract. That guy is the first round draft. And that's what happened here. It defied everything. And Conor fought him for 30 minutes. I just think it's an amazing thing.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, he looked very composed. It's always like, oh, is he going to be? Is this the one? Did he say too much? Did he dig too deep of a hole for himself? And
oh no,
he seemed composed. Yeah, no, he's a professional in that way. But yeah, it was a pretty crazy night. And yeah, I mean, no one else has ever done it.
Yeah,
and I mean, it really is like the Rocky. You know, the Rocky story is being the tough neighborhood guy just fighting and grinding away and gets a shot. Hey, what if you fight Apollo Creed for the world title? And, you know.
Hey, speaking of, let me check my dates. Canelo Triple G, that's Saturday.
Is it this Saturday?
It's this Saturday.
That's
September
gonna be
16th. Which we shouldn't give a plug to after that prick De La Hoya tried to burn our sport. But I'm still giving him a plug because I like that fight. You know, I'm excited about it. And you know what I really like about that? I don't know if you saw Canelo's last fight where he took on Cesar Chavez Jr., but that's where they announced the Triple G Canelo fight. And boxing never does that. Boxing is never organized enough to parlay and use as a springboard one event into the next, which Coker and Dana do every single show. Oh, yeah. Well, as a fan, I want that. I get the blues when something's done. I'm hungover for him and going, doggone it. I want more. So when boxing can do their, or, you know, when Coker and Dana do it all the time, it's something to look forward to. I loved that boxing was able to do that. They brought Triple G out. They put the spotlight. They advertised the prepackaged B-roll on the big screens, and all of a sudden, boom, we got something to look forward to. I'm hoping they do that after this mega fight. Here they've got one of the most competitive boxing matches in memory, at least in recent memory.
Oh, yeah.
This is the great time to announce what's next for whoever wins, and boxing misses this all the time, and I just hope that they do it.
Right.
That was a real treat when they brought Triple G out, ring-walked him, and squared him off with Canelo and told us a date.
Yeah.
That was a treat.
Yeah.
In MMA, we get it every time. In boxing, we don't. I hope they do that again.
Right.
And I can't guess who would be next. Andre Ward,
that's what
he
I was
too big?
Say. I
Andre's
say.
Too big, isn't he?
I don't know. They can fluctuate so much with all the weight classes. The last full Canelo fight I saw was when he fought Mayweather, and then I had seen all the highlights of that and the face-off with Triple G, and that there was whispers of that. And I mean, who could it possibly be after this? I would imagine that, well, who knows if it's even, I couldn't even call it of who I think would win, but I think it could be one of those ones where they immediate rematch or something like that, because there isn't another really big name, you know, out there.
There's not.
I mean, not that high level.
Not now that the biggest name, Floyd, just took himself out.
Mm-hmm.
And Floyd deserves credit. You know, he took some fights that I didn't fully understand, but along that journey, he took on all the right guys, too.
Right.
He did take on the De La Hoyas, the Shane Mosley's, Canelo. You know, he did take some fights where I didn't fully understand it, but along that path, man, he took them all out.
Right.
And it matters.
Yep.
And Floyd should be remembered for that.
Yeah.
All right. What else you got? What else is cooking in your world? You got anything you want to drop down here?
Yeah. You know, I mean, just really the big thing.
Oh, you do. Now, see, that was a fake offer I just gave you because nobody's ever. I'm excited you're ready. I want to hear what you got. But I assumed you go, no, Chael, what do you want to talk? What do you got, Ben? Take it away.
Yeah, you know, I'm really pleased to have the opportunity to be on here. And like we covered it in some pieces and just talking about, you know, that next step and you know, what can we possibly do more of, and kind of some things that I'd like to bring attention to is, like, I think in a lot of times, and this goes good with boxing too, is like in boxing, people get a lot of credit for their amateur career. Like they were an Olympian or they were 205 or whatever. But not a lot of credit is given to MMA fighters' amateur career. So that was one time earlier in my career where, like, oh, you're 5-0 and no one's fought you. It's like, well, we can't get anybody to fight me because I was 10-1 as an amateur with 10 submissions and 5 championship fights, all of which I won. And, you know, I trained for 3 months before I had my first fight, came from wrestling, had martial arts background as a little kid, came to fighting with, after 3 months of training, you commentated my first fight. I won in the second round. And, you know, I built all this experience up as an amateur and fought the best guys in Oregon. Kevin Keeney, you saw him. You were there for most of them. So giving credit to that amateur career, I started fighting at 155 pounds. I was a little tiny, skinny, even skinnier than I am now. Bumped up to 170 for fun. Won the FCFF welterweight title, defended it, and then announced that I was going to go pro, and, you know, I've been successful. That one little loss as a pro was by decision, and it was kind of a bummer. You know, I think he was a better man on that day, but if we fought 10 times, I'd win 9 of them. So he was the better man on that day. But, you know, the other thing too is I think now, and this could just be me making it up, being 29 years old, I think a lot of guys are looking, there's a lot of young guys getting a little bit more looks, it seems like, because I think if they just saw, they've never met me, they don't know anything about me, they see my age next to my record and my height and whatever, that maybe like, 29, he's He's starting to get up there in age, but I've had 11 fights, 22 fights overall. Like I said, I started when I wrestled in high school, I wrestled at 103 pounds for two seasons. So I didn't even, I wasn't even fully grown until the end of my freshman year. So, and I've worked really, really hard to become bigger and stronger and faster. And a lot of my, all of my talent, I think, and skill is just hard work, you know, and trying to train smarter and do the right things. And I believe, you know, I've put in countless hours of work, and I've come from, you know, a fairly humble background as far as, I mean, no one did martial arts in my family. No one ever wrestled before. And, you know, I've took it upon myself to try to get as far as I can in the sport. And it's, I do want to be, you know, I want to be able to say I'm a world champion, you know, the Bellator world champion or the UFC world champion. But if I just fight, like I was saying earlier, if I beat one guy after another, I just want to become the best fighter that I can be, just get as far in the sport as I can and keep winning, keep being competitive. And when it's time, when I'm, and it's time for me to step down because the young guys are bashing my head in, then I'll just start competing in jiu-jitsu full time. So I'm committed to the long haul. Those times where I get bummed out, the times that are frustrating that we don't get the call, we just get another fight and we fight some more. And, I've decided a long time ago, as long as my body is willing, my mind will be too, to just keep going. So I'm excited for that, you know, excited for the Submission Underground coming up. That's going to be a fun event on that could be the most views probably live that I've ever had, at Submission Underground. Flow Combat, you know, live streaming that. So, you know, it's going to be awesome. I'm excited now when I talk about fighting and when I talk about the passion that I have, I get fired up. Like I'm
loving this.
Yeah. I already trained this morning and I'm ready to train again. So, yeah, the passion and the hard work and the drive is all there.
All right. I'll tell you how to get a great night's sleep. I do it myself. I have a Casper mattress. When I got a Casper mattress, when these guys came on board, Ben, to be a sponsor, they go, hey, we don't want you to just do a read. We want to know your personal experience. And if this isn't a good fit, don't do it. I go, okay, great. Well, what does that mean? They go, well, we're going to send you a mattress. What size do you want? So I got the big mattress, the king size mattress, and it was terrible timing for me because I had just bought a mattress. I paid $4,000. I went down to the store. I didn't have a truck. I didn't have a buddy. Get it to my house. Okay, great. I was happy with my mattress. It was just fine. Then these guys come in, so I go, okay, well, I got to try this out. So I take my mattress that I just paid $4,000 for and wrestled into my house and up the stairs. I take it down to the garage, and I'm going, well, I'm not ready to get rid of it yet because I don't know if I like this Casper thing, and a good night's sleep does matter. So I put it in the garage. I bring the Casper in. Everything's great. I eventually, a buddy named Joel, gave him my mattress. He hauled it away. In exchange, he got the mattress, but I kept the Casper. And the relevance is it's just a really great mattress. If you're getting a good night's sleep, what doctors and experts say should be about 8 hours, that represents a third of the day, which is a third of your week, of your month, of your year, and of your life. If there's anything to get right, guys, it is your mattress. The Casper mattress has over 30,000 global reviews. Joseph G. from Colorado said, as a former athlete, sleep and comfort is key to performance, and Casper does that now for my life and for my wife. Dozens of pro basketball, baseball, and football players sleep on a Casper, and they rave about it. Skip the typical mattress shopping game. Buying a Casper is easy. Order online. It's delivered to your door in a compact box. Free shipping and free returns. It's available in the U.S., Canada, and now the U.K. Don't sit on the sidelines. Try the Casper for 100 nights in your own home. If you don't like it, send it back. You're going to get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/chael. Use the promo code CHAEL. That's CASPER.com/CHAEL. Use the promo code CHAEL. Terms and conditions apply. All right, you're welcome for that, by the way.
Here at Podcast One, we love hearing from you. We read every tweet and comment you send our way. So don't miss your chance to take our summer listener survey. Just go to podcastone.com and click on the survey banner, or go to podcastone.com/my survey. It only takes a few minutes, and it gives you the opportunity to make a direct impact on your favorite shows. Tell us how you really feel so we can get to know you better. We value your thoughts and participation. So check out the survey at podcastone.com/my survey, or click on the survey banner on podcastone.com.
You're welcome. You're welcome with Chael Sonnen.
Who are you most excited for? You don't have to say me on the main card of the submission.
You versus Craig Jones, of course.
Yeah, yeah. How is Brony still on?
Yeah. So see, there's the thing. I mean, I'm going to answer you, and on one hand, I'm insulting you because the skills. I mean, you and Craig is where the skills are on this match. Actually, Amanda versus Sarah is very incredible skills too.
Yeah,
that's why it's the main event. But I will tell you, there is some fun. I like to have fun. I understand you got to have competition in architecture. There is something fun about Phil Baroni because he's nuts. I will admit. I mean, he is a wild card. You never know. Is the guy working you? Is the guy a little bit off? You never know what's going on, but the guy's fun. And AJ's a lot of fun too. AJ brings in some killer skills. He's going to be coming right off of Abu Dhabi. Last time AJ was out here, he told me off. Told me off three separate times, in fact. I still don't know what he was so mad about.
Yeah.
Told me off three separate times. But there was still a funness to it. So you get AJ and Phil to start going back and forth and then lock them in a cage with one another with only Dave Hagen in there to figure it out. I mean, you know, I'd be fibbing to you if I told you I wasn't kind of excited to see what's going to happen there. So I guess I got to go with that one.
Okay, yeah. No, that definitely seems interesting.
You know, there's another one. This might surprise you. A young man named Sage Brown. He's 14. I believe he's had a birthday and now he's 15. Local guy. He's taking on a kid out of Montana coming all the way up. But there is something impressive about kids' martial arts and kids getting in there and kind of refining their skills. And so there's a funness to that one, too. But and Sage is a big draw, man. He's chasing you for how many tickets can a guy bring in. I'm telling you, this kid's bringing his whole damn school.
Oh, wow.
So I think there's some fun on that one, too.
That's cool. When was it? I'm now remembering. I didn't think of it until just now. But you guys always were kind of innovative as far as the amateur, just the events and how you ran the events at the FCFF. And I remember it had to have been when I first started fighting. You had the Oregon champion versus the Washington champion high school wrestling match.
What
year was that, roughly?
Oh, I'll tell you exactly what it was.
And they just went crazy.
Thank you for saying that. Miles Higland took on Taylor Meeks.
Okay.
Meeks went on to become an All-American, and he's actually now coaching at Oregon State. That match was 4-2. And so on one hand, Miles was kind of in over his head, but in hindsight, that was a hell of a big match.
Yeah.
Yeah, Meeks beat him, but Meeks only beat him 4-2 and went on to be a Division I All-American.
Wow. That's cool. Yeah, I can't imagine being a high school kid and being able to. I mean, I guess if you're a champion already, you're not probably too nervous. But I just remember, like, a lot of great wrestling matches, it was a lot of scrambling and fighting for no points, you know.
Right.
It wasn't as high as, I didn't remember it being the score, but yeah, that just came back in my memory. That was a cool event.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. And there has been some crazy stuff. You know, the tradition that goes on down at the Roseland is really quite remarkable. You know, particularly when you go into it, or, you know, Kevin and I's participation, which was help organize and try to do it in a professional way. And then that was kind of it. The rest is up to you guys.
Mm.
And, when you look back, you know, Randy Couture used to announce it, and Jeff Munson's competed in there. Now Misha Tate, John Jones. For Submission Underground 2, did you get to meet John Jones?
I was right there with him.
What was that like? I mean, that had to be pretty cool, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, a lot of people know I cannot go back on anything I've ever said, but always been skeptical of the guy, just as far as, I mean, incredible fighter, but
sure,
things that have happened in his life that I, you know, don't necessarily agree with. But so he was right there. He was standing right 5 feet away from me. I did want to say hi for a moment because he knows my old wrestling coach. I just wanted to say, hey, say hi to Chad,
sure,
and whatever, even though I could just call him on the cell phone and be like, hey, Chad, how are you? But
it's still a conversation piece, though.
It was a conversation. It was a conversation piece. It was crazy to see him. He's a big guy. It's him and the scale between him and Dan Henderson. Dan Henderson's incredible, but man, it's the size difference was pretty crazy to see him up there. And you see him on TV, you know that they're big, and then you see him in person, and yeah, some pretty big guys. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it would have been interesting. I wish you would have said hello, just because I think you would have had a positive experience. And John Jones is such a nice dude. John Jones wants everybody to think he's the world's nicest dude, which he's not.
Mm.
But he is definitely a really nice guy.
Okay.
And I think you would have had that experience. And, you know, I come on this show or in other places, and I sometimes disagree with John's public persona because he wants to be so well-liked. It's like, John, the one thing you're missing is you are a really likable guy. Just go be yourself, because when you put up any kind of facade and people see through it, they assume you're covering up or disguising for some kind of a scumbag. Mm. I understand he's done a few scumbag things. I'm talking about as a person to visit with. John's a nice, likable guy with a good sense of humor, and I sometimes just wish he could go back in his career to when he's 24 years old and just be that guy. Yeah. He doesn't have to be perfect. He doesn't have to carry the Bible around. He doesn't have to be any of these things. He's allowed to stub his toe here or there. He makes it a little harder on himself when he's putting out this portrayal of, like, you know, the nicest guy to ever live. It's like, well, no, you're not that, but you're a damn decent guy. So I was hoping maybe you had some kind of an exchange with him, because he would have been pleasant, I guarantee you.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, I'd be down. I mean, people that know me really well know that I can talk to anybody, whether I agree with them or not. Well, that's some good. Maybe if we bump into each other, I'll say, Chill. Chill said what's up.
Yeah. You know, I would have liked to have seen John in there. I love seeing him with Hendo, but I just think that he may be one of the best grapplers out there, but he doesn't know it. Like, we tried to get him with Vinny, and he's like, no. Vinny's way over my league. You know, I'll happily come out and compete, but give me some, you know, I have no belt. I'm a white belt.
Right.
Vinny, kill me. And it's like, yeah, Vinny might. That is true. He might. But he might not. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, there's something to see there when you're dealing with that level of athleticism. Yeah, is Vinny going to get his hand raised? Yeah, sure. I think a reasonable person would conclude that. But for my money, I'm still willing to pay to answer that question, because John is just a special talent. You saw what he did with Dan. Dan's a two-time Olympian. Oof. John looked like he was playing at times.
Yes, yes.
And,
oh, yeah.
You know, he took out a two-time Olympian in moments.
Yeah.
It does make me wonder, how good is this guy? Is he grappling's to compare it to the boxing of Conor McGregor? I don't know where Conor sits. I know he went a half hour with the greatest to have ever done it. Does that make him a top 10 fighter? I don't know that it does. I don't know that it doesn't. And speculation for me and for my money, that's what will separate me with my money, is speculation. I don't want to know the answer. But I need enough room to go, well, I could see it this way and I could see it that way. And I'm not sure that John Jones couldn't go into a controlled atmosphere, whether it's Submission Underground, EBI, Abu Dhabi, which is coming up, and have a surprising amount of success. Would you disagree with me?
He would do, yeah, he would do very well.
He would do damn well, wouldn't he?
He would do very well. I mean, yeah, we've seen it, you know, the first Cormier fight, and then, but yeah, definitely the Sug match is just, yeah, it's like, wow, how can you be that clearly, we clearly can tell you're beating the person with the better pedigree or the person that's better on paper, and yeah, he's... definitely a good wrestler, definitely a good grappler.
Were we supposed to call Sean Shelby?
We were, I think.
What happened to that? You were going to let that go?
I was waiting for you, man.
Guy down here pushing his career, you let something like that go?
Yeah.
Ben, I'll tell you, you know, if you don't know, I know you listen to this podcast and I appreciate that, but if you haven't taken my advice, if you will, A&E, Emmy-nominated groundbreaking docuseries, Leah Remini, Scientology and the Aftermath. It's back for season two. Did you ever catch season one? It's okay to say no. You want to finish it. Okay. Incredible show. And it's just a documentary. Leah Remini used to be a Scientologist. She left the church. Her show, Leah Remini, Scientology and the Aftermath, just follows Leah around along with other former high-level Scientology executives and church members. They delve deep into the shocking stories of abuse, heartbreak, harassment experienced by those who have left the church and spoken publicly about their experiences. This season, Leah Remini continues her quest to give a voice to victims of the Church of Scientology. The series explores accounts from former members whose lives have been significantly impacted by the church's practices. If you want to get caught up on the first season, you can do that on the A&E app or AETV.com. It's a docuseries. I love it. It's incredible. It is shocking. I don't want to ruin it for you, but I do want to encourage you to watch it. It is shocking what goes on. For any of our listeners that want to see it, every Tuesday, 9 o'clock, 8 central, only on A&E.
Well, I know what I'm doing now.
I got to tell you, you weren't very helpful on that.
I know. I'm sorry. I when I first got Netflix, however long ago that was, the first thing I did was watch every single documentary on there, and then I ran out of stuff to watch, and so now I got to pay attention to cable a little bit more, give them some love. And
Narcos, are you caught up?
No.
What?
Dude.
First season? Did you do the first season?
I haven't yet. No. I was very busy with Game of Thrones recently, so yep. I can only get really intense on like one show at a time. I rewatch a lot of things, like I said, on Netflix. But yeah, Narcos, as people have been telling me.
I would put Game of Thrones as the greatest show ever made.
Good. I agree.
But I'm not sure I want to put Narcos at number two. Oh. It's that good and well made. Not only is it entertaining and all of that, it's also really well made. I mean, if you wanted to get artsy and talk about cinematography and character development and all of that, you could, yeah. And it would fly across the charts. I would put Game of Thrones as I'm saying this to you so people that take my opinion on shows know where my head's at. I would put Game of Thrones as number one. I don't like fantasy. I don't like sci-fi, and I still put Game of Thrones as number one.
There you go.
Narcos is subtitled. Does that turn you off?
No.
Okay, that would greatly turn me off if somebody told me to watch a show and I found I had to read it. I don't want to learn. I don't want to have to read while I'm trying to be entertained. However, with that said, I still, it might be the number two show ever made. It's that good.
Wow.
It's that good. Lee Remini, Scientology and the Aftermath. It's incredible, but for different reasons. It doesn't have the same cinematic effect and all, but it's not scripted. It's just, right. It's a documentary. So, but you get to learn something. If I can learn something while being entertained, for me, that's the 1-2 punch. That Absolutely. Is what every teacher, every professor in every college and every high school in this country strive to do, is to be entertaining while teaching. It's almost impossible. Mm. When you can do that, when I can learn something while being entertained, there's nothing better, and that's really what this does. All right, you got any final thoughts?
Well, you know, again, it was great chatting with you. You know, just trying to figure it out. It's been a learning experience this whole time. You know, I had to learn that it isn't necessarily just about the fighting. It's a lot of different stuff. We're figuring a lot of things out. I can tell you that I've amassed a team behind me, you know, people that have helped me out, you know, this podcast and things like that, my training partners, you know, we're building to critical mass as far as what we're going to be able to do. We have some really good ideas and we're going to work on some stuff. So I'm excited, you know, of course, check me out on social media @Ben_Eggly. Not the best Twitter guy. I know I'm supposed to be. You could shame me for that. Instagram is great. And then I have my YouTube channel. It's just my name, Ben Eggly. A lot of jiu-jitsu, in particular kind of jiu-jitsu for MMA, both gi and no gi. So check that out as well. And
you know, for being a badass, you're not a very intimidating guy.
No.
All right, let's do this. All right, listeners, everybody, the show's over. Go enjoy your day. Go on about your day. I'll see you tomorrow. However, for anybody that wants to just let this tape roll, this is just Ben and I talking now. Ben, let's do this. I'm trying to think of how to do this for the podcast, but let's do this. I don't know the answers. I don't know if I feel like you looked, I don't want to put myself over here, but I feel like you would look to me as a seasoned veteran that has the answer. Whether you look at me like that or not, I feel like I should have answers for you. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to end this show. I'm going to call Richard Chu at Bellator right now in front of you.
Wow.
I'm then going to call Sean Shelby at the UFC right here in front of you. And we're just going to ask him. We're just going to be regular guys and we'll just tell him what's up. Hey, I'm down here with Ben. What's he got to do? Guy's got a record of 20 wins, 2 losses. He's a sitting champion in King of the Cage. 10-1 is the pros, and that's the only record they're going to look at for right or wrong.
Right, that's what they're going to look at.
And I'm just going to ask him. If Richard Chu doesn't answer, we'll call Scott Coker. If Sean Shelby doesn't answer, we're going to call Dana White. I'm going to get you answers. Ethan, let's find a way to this for the audience. I guess pause. We're going to make these calls, so it's probably going to take us about a half hour. But let's come back and tell the audience what we learned. So, again, the show's over. Anybody that wants to go on about their work, go about their work. But Ben and I are going to keep this rolling. We're going to try to learn something.
Let's make it happen.
You're welcome. You're welcome with JL Sonnen.
Okay, so let's recap for the audience.
Mind-blowing.
Yeah, first we talked to Richard Chu.
Yep.
To recap what he said, these conversations are a little bit private, so let's be a little careful on what we say here, but I thought he was very positive. It sounds like Richard has done his job. He used the term, if I'm remembering correctly, he said, I don't have any holes at 170, which means I don't have room to bring in new 170 pounds. Well, if you're Richard, you shouldn't. If you're doing your job well, you're going to have those spots full. So Richard's done his job well. He knew exactly who you were.
Right.
He knew about your last two fights, which was good.
Yes.
He knew that you were 10-1. Well, these are all positive things. What was your take? What'd your stomach tell you? That was cool.
Yeah, you know, we had that answer. It was great to actually hear it, you know, directly. You know, I believe it. I get it that it's a stacked weight class and there's a lot of people. nothing bad. The tone was good. It's just kind of reaffirming what we've already heard, but there was a voice of, or a hint of hope in his voice.
Yeah, I picked up on that too.
Yeah.
So good. You did. I want you to feel better about this. So then we got a hold of Sean Shelby again to go through the list real fast. It's a guy that's done his job. Yes. He doesn't have holes, but he shouldn't have holes. That should not discourage you. He shouldn't have holes. He doesn't. He said, you know, it's about 6 months out before I would see something there.
Right.
He knew who you were. He knew what your record was, and he knew about your last two fights, one with Ryan Walker, one with Tyson Jeffries. That's encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
What'd your stomach tell you?
Same thing, you know, and then he provided, you know, some things maybe to do in the meantime, and it was under your suggestion, I guess, of get on the internet and look for those fights that might be dropping out and be ready to maybe step in as a replacement. Obviously, getting on the Contender Series would be great. I would, if someone told me that I could get on the Contender, I would, of course, jump on that right away. So, he kind of gave some short-term options that would be something we could do maybe in the meantime. And again, saying, oh, you know, maybe in 6 months there'd be some time, you know, hopefully not, opportunity to jump in there, you know, that's again, hopeful.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that was your take on it, because when they knew who you are, when I said, yeah, Ben Eagley, when Richard Chu and Sean Shelby can tell me your record of 10-1 before I tell it to them, when Sean Shelby can state your last two opponents before I tell, I thought those were good too. So yeah, you're positive. I'm trying to give you some spark.
No,
you got
yeah,
a little spark here?
If spark.
All right. Well, the show's over and everybody's listening, but I think we just made a little podcast there. So hopefully some people stuck around.
Yes.
All right, guys, for Ben Eagley, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.
Thanks for listening to Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Fantasy football season is here, and we've got the best fantasy football podcast anywhere because we've got the best fantasy football analyst in Evan Silva from rotoworld.com. Make sure you subscribe to the Fantasy Feast podcast so you can hear me, Ross Tucker, get Evan's rankings and draft strategies to give you the edge you need this year. That's the Fantasy Feast podcast, available on the Podcast One app or wherever podcasts are found.